Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs.
I want to give you guys an exclamation of my appreciation of listening to Dibbs' agitation meditations about Butler's association compensation expectation and Miami's expiration.
Cha-ching!
On 95.7 The Game.
You got all that? Got all that, everyone?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Live Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk is righteously brewed here in San Francisco. We're still up on a high. Al Michaels was on the show. We're going to stay up on a high. Greg Cosell is about to be on the show, 15 minutes away. Greg Cosell. Giants general manager Zach Manassian later this hour. Jonathan Kuminga is in. Camp is underway. Buster Posey and Zach Manassian had their season-ending kind of exit interview press conference. Brock Purdy, Ricky Pearsall, Juwan Jennings all out tomorrow night for the 49ers. Nick Bosa and George Kittle already were out. So you got a skeleton crew heading down to SoFi to play a football game tomorrow night, and the spread is flying up like a hot air balloon. So it's up to 7.5. So we'll keep talking all those things out. Quick palate cleanser, though, that's based on a conversation you and I were just having off of the air.
Okay.
What if you did all these baseball series and you rooted just for which city you liked better?
Okay.
Forget the stupid teams and all their, you know, uniforms and players who annoy you. The reason I'm thinking of it is the Padres are playing the Cubs right now. They're in the bottom of the ninth. Looks like the Cubs are probably about to lose. They're a couple outs away. We'll see. But it's 3-0 Padres. And I'm kind of pulling for the Cubs. And you were like, why are you pulling for the Cubs? And I'm just like, I love to fly the W, man. Like, I have had such great experiences going out to Chicago. I love that city.
It's a great city.
I love that city. But then I was like, ooh, actually, I mean, San Diego's not bad. San Diego's not bad either. So then, like, that's a high-level city-on-city
matchup.
No doubt. And then I thought about what had happened earlier, which is Cleveland's playing Detroit.
It's a slugfest. I've never been to Cleveland.
Neither have I.
I've been to Detroit.
I got robbed.
I met you in Detroit.
And I got robbed.
Yeah.
I didn't actually get robbed. My hotel room got robbed.
I would take Detroit over Cleveland. I've never been to Cleveland, but I went to the old Joe Louis Arena for a Red Wings game with a 12:30 start, and that was incredibly memorable. Final Four there, and I went to New Tiger Stadium. I like Detroit. Detroit, not in my top 10 of American cities, but I would favor it over Cleveland, even though I've never been.
Yeah, I've never been to Cleveland.
Boston, New York's another slugfest.
Believe it or not, I've never been to Boston.
I've only been there briefly, very briefly.
Never, ever been to Boston. And I've only been to Cincinnati's airport, but they're playing the Dodgers, so I don't care who you are. I'm pulling for the opponent there. But you lived
in L.A. for 15 years or so, whatever.
Yeah.
I was there for a good solid five junior years in the Valley. I like L.A., but, I was happy to leave.
I will tell you this, man. Every single time, because the family's all still there, and every time we go back, multiple times a year to visit family, it takes me a good solid 2.5 minutes on those freeways before I want to eject myself from the car. Like, I don't know how I did it for 20 years. I do not know how. And every time we have this conversation, I say the same thing, which is I know, especially like we do a radio show. So a lot of people who are listening to us, we do afternoon drive. a lot of you are stuck in traffic.
Yep.
As you listen to our show. And I always think to myself, no, you're not. I know you think you are, but you're not. Like, traffic here does not exist if you've lived in LA. It is so overwhelmingly unavoidable and awful and just relentless. Round the clock, 7 days a week. It's just awful. It is absolutely awful. I don't know how I lived there. I don't know how I did it. Anyway.
Yeah, it's number two, according to Consumer Affairs, among U.S. cities in worst traffic. San Francisco is fourth. No, Washington, D.C.
D.C., interesting. I've
D.C.
never driven
one,
there.
L.A., followed by Miami, San Francisco, and Atlanta.
Where the hell's New York?
This is just Consumer Affairs.
Okay.
So,
you ever driven in New York?
I've actually
drive up to a tunnel and then just sit there for an hour and a half. Like
4 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
I was basically parked outside of what was then Giant Stadium before the Jets moved there. I was there for about 90 minutes, just staring at it out the window.
Just looking.
Just trying to get into Manhattan. Lots of luck.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. L.A. is, you get to one of those 8-lane freeways and it's still like bumper to bumper. It's like, how do we have 8 lanes and we're still not moving?
Listen, there's traffic in all these places, but it's strategic. And so I always feel like you can work your way around it. The problem in L.A. is it's 11 in the morning on a Tuesday and you can't move. You can't get anywhere. Anyway, the Padres won. The Padres beat the Cubs.
And New York is sixth, by the way, in these rankings.
Well, those rankings
down from number five.
Fakakta.
So, okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's based on average commute time in minutes. So
okay.
Whatever. There you have it.
Padres beat the Cubs 3-0, and it's an historic victory. Do you know why?
No.
That win right there marks the first time in this wild card era, this current format. It is the first time when the host team has won game one and then lost game two. The host teams were undefeated prior to this game. After winning game one, they would always win game two and close the
is
series
is this
out.
Year three of this new format?
At least three or four. Yeah, yeah. So and we're not dealing with a whole lot of history.
And I love it. But the this fact that it's a three game and you just stay. You stay there. We don't have to travel and skip a day. Yep. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then you're on to the next round. If you play Thursday, that means it's a double must win. I like it. The higher seeded team, you get to be home. You get all three there. Doesn't mean you should win, but it makes it so it's like a normal series.
Well, Detroit, Cleveland, and now San Diego and the Cubs all have a deciding game three coming up after splitting the first two. So that's fun. That gets super dramatic, and that's kind of easy to watch. All right, 888-957-9570. Greg Cosell is coming on in 8 minutes, and what a perfect time. So we can ask him, hey, you know all these players that nobody actually wants on the field? They're going to be on the field. What do you think? What have we seen from them? I sort of think about it this way, or I wonder from you, I wonder from all of our listeners. I'm trying to think about how what has taken place changes the viewing experience. Because a Niner-Ram game is often one of those, like, hair on the back of the neck. I bet if you're a big Niner fan, you probably know a lot of Rams fans, maybe friends, maybe family. Like, I got family who's going to be texting tomorrow night with trash talk. And it ticks me off. Like, I'm already can feel myself getting angry because I'm like, this is very, you can't, if you're the fifth grader and you beat up a kindergartner on the playground, you don't get to stand over that person and talk trash.
You get the win.
You
do. A win's a win.
You get the win.
And you are what your record says you are.
All of these things are true, but I'm like, I don't want to hear your trash talk when, like, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is our receiving core.
He's a paid professional.
I know he is. So Sky Moore and so all of them. I get it. I'm not asking for anyone to feel sorry for the Niners. I just wonder, as a Niner fan, how does your viewing experience change? Because I do think you sit down in front of this one a little bit less pounding your chest. Don't you?
Probably.
Don't you go in tomorrow night like, we're probably going to lose this game.
You would figure.
I'd like to be surprised, but we're probably going to lose this
7.5-point dogs, and I won't say on the road because they're not really on the road, as Al Michaels was just explaining so eloquently. And I think about last year, both of those games against the Rams. The first game was a straight-up giveaway, not unlike what you did to Jacksonville. Like, You had five plays against Jacksonville. In a six-play span, you basically gave it away. You had a fumble, and then you gave up a gigantic run, and then you threw a pick. That's kind of the way the first Rams game went last year. You remember that sequence?
Oh, I remember all
of it. Return, Tutu Atwell, a PI, the rest of it.
Ronnie Bell dropped, Jake Moody missed. Yes. Keep going. Yep, all of it.
The second game last year, and I just was looking at it.
You were
not out of it at that point. You were, I guess you were 6-7. They were 7-6. If you win that game, you can still keep hope alive, Jesse Jackson.
You needed it. And it was the Thursday night rain game.
At home. We were both there.
And Debo dropped the ball that probably could have, should have won the game.
And that was the Devondre Campbell quit game.
Yes, it was.
As well. And you lost 12-6. So if you think about just last year, the first matchup, you gave it away. The second matchup was literally right there for you. Brock Purdy in a rain game. Oh, can't do it. So last year was more frustrating. And I'm kind of with you about tomorrow. Look, you've got an offense that is decimated. You've got a running back, but you haven't really been able to run it. So for me, this becomes a what do you do, Kyle, kind of a game. Yeah. Do you just, and I would love to see him play Brian Robinson Jr. and CMC together. I don't think they've done it at all this year, even for a snap. So they're going to have to get creative, is what I'm saying.
No doubt. The good news, and we'll dive into this with Greg Cosell here in just a few minutes. I think the good news is, like when you compare this to when the Niners had to play without Brock last year and Brandon Allen took over and you were in Green Bay and you were also banged up. But like Christian McCaffrey, I can't remember if that was what did he play in that game? I know he only played three games. I can't remember if that was
11
one of them.
Carries for 31.
Okay. Was that his first game back?
I'd have to look, but Brandon Allen had 199 yards and a pick. You were 5.5-point dogs in that one.
And the game was over in 10 seconds. It was one of those where like...
Well, a little longer than that,
but you know what I mean. Yeah. Like the game started and you were like, oh yeah, never mind. Like, because you convince yourself as a fan. You're like, we could do it. People are going to step up, next man up. And then the game started and they went right down the field. And then Brandon Allen came out and inspired no confidence. And you're like, damn it. The one thing I will say about this Niner offense that's heading out there, yes, decimated by injury. However, the people who are filling in are proven professionals. Like Mac Jones is 2-0. That's a better backup than you had last year. Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Demarcus Robinson and Kendrick Bourne, are they journeymen? Okay, maybe, but like these are professional receivers who have had some success. Your backfield has two guys who have been really, really successful in this league, one of them being a star. And I know Kittle is out, but like Tonjes has shown himself, I think, to be a pretty interesting player at the tight end position. I'm not trying to tell you they're going to beat the Rams tomorrow, but I do think this 49er group is better prepared to go put on a professional performance than what the hampered groups of last year were able to do.
That was McCaffrey's third game back, and they still had Mason, Kittle, Juwan, and Debo.
Yep.
So they had more of the frontline guys, but the quarterback, Brandon Allen versus Mac Jones, you'd much rather have Mac.
All right, Greg Cosell is going to jump in here, and we'll talk all of this out with him. It's a ragtag crew heading to L.A., but that's not what we got on the show today. It's anything but. Greg Cosell of NFL Films joins us next on Willard and Dibs.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
Yeah, that's a great question because I think that, you know, it's a great question and a hard question to answer.
On 95.7 The Game.
All right, as we said, on a roll today, even though the 49ers are not. Get over to YouTube right now. This is what we love to do. And by the way, stay there for the whole hour because it's Greg Cosell now and Giants general manager Zach Manassian after that, and both will be with us on YouTube in addition to your listening pleasure on the radio here on Willard and Dibs. Greg Cosell, NFL Films, we got a lot to talk about. Hey, Greg, how you doing?
I'm just trying to figure out if I can play wide receiver for the Niners tomorrow night, you know?
Well, can you?
Well, you know, maybe a few years ago, but unfortunately not today.
I've heard you can shoot. I don't know if you can catch, though.
Well, you know, there was a time, but that was many, many years ago. That was like circa early to mid-70s.
Brutal set of injuries, which is what you're referring to. But let's look backward before we go forward. Greg, what did you see with Brock Purdy last week in what was clearly not a great performance for him?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest with you guys, and I know you got to do this because you're on the radio every day, but the week-to-week stuff with Brock Purdy is a little kind of gets a little silly to me because I almost feel like people talk about Brock Purdy as if, well, he's not really that good, so if he has a good game, yeah, let's wait and see then what he's going to do next week. I mean, Brock Purdy's their starting quarterback. He's a good player. I mean, I think if you pretty much talk to almost anybody, they'll tell you he's a good player. Was he as sharp as he normally is in this game and he had just come back and we have no idea how the injuries affected him? He wasn't as sharp as he normally is working between the numbers. There were throws he was a little wild high. I don't know if that's a function of his toe, his shoulder. I can't speak to that. To me, the much larger issue for this team, and almost every quarterback in the league is like this, they need a running game. They cannot run the football. There's no sustainability. There's no consistency. They're one of the worst rushing teams in the league right now. McCaffrey is, I think, at the bottom of the league in terms of yards before first contact. He's not getting past the first level of the defense. His first contact on average is 1.47 yards. Think about that. Okay, so their run game is what the main issue is right now, because Purdy, as I said, almost every quarterback is, with very few exceptions, is a ball distributor and an executor of a well-schemed offense. And if the offense can't run the football, it puts him in a really difficult spot.
And I'm thinking about the ETN run where they executed it perfectly. They got to that second level, took the safeties out of it. Is that what the Niners are lacking right now, Greg? The ability to beat the defensive lineman and get to that second level and seal off a lane for McCaffrey?
Yeah, they can't get him to the second level with any consistency at all. And even if he does manage to just get through that first level, it's not really clean. He's sort of, you know, fighting through to do that. So he's not able to reaccelerate, which is a strength of his game, the ability to reaccelerate in traffic, and he's not able to do that. But to me, that is the bigger issue. You know how it is, guys, and you deal with this every day. You're on the radio every day. All people want to talk about, I get into this conversation every week with Colin Cowherd. All people ever want to talk about is the quarterback.
Yep.
He's not the only player on the field. And, you know, I think we get caught up in analyzing the quarterback every single week as if he's the only player that matters. And in this particular case, Purdy is very good at what he is, okay? But if there's no fully formed, fully dimensional offense, he won't play as well as he can play. It's just it's a simple statement. And, you know, so everybody wants to say, well, that's Brock Purdy's fault. No, it's not Brock Purdy's fault.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us on the River Islands guest line, as he is every week at this time here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game, one of our favorite segments of the entire week. So, Greg, I agree with you. Let's talk about that run game, what some of the characteristics are of their struggles that you see, and what you think needs to sort of change there. What's the fix? Is it expanding the passing game to keep a defense honest? Does the O-line need to play better? I'm sure it's a lot of all those things, but what are you really focused on?
I mean, as you guys know, when you're struggling in an area, it's never one thing. Like, you can't just say, oh, it's this guy. And I'm certainly not Chris Forster, who certainly knows a lot more about O-line play than I do. So I don't want to sit here and say, well, this guy's not playing well, because I don't know that for a fact. And obviously, I'm not charting every single snap and all five offensive linemen. All I can tell you is, as a group, there's not really first-level gaps for McCaffrey to run through. They're not there. So they're trying to run multiple kinds of runs. They're running inside. They're trying to get them on the perimeter. I mean, they're clearly searching for the run game for ways to get McCaffrey out on, you know, get him some space. But right now, there's not a lot of space, and it's just a really hard deal. So they're caught up in a lot of longer yardage situations. They're not staying ahead of the chains, and that also makes it harder for Kyle Shanahan or any coordinator to call plays, because contrary to what people might think, every situation has a core group of plays. In other words, when it's third and six, the quarterback knows he's going to get one of six concepts. He's not getting one of 40 concepts. He's getting one of six concepts. That's the way it is on almost every down and distance. So it just makes it harder to really call plays and feel comfortable about it if you're behind the chains.
Especially now that you're going to a backup quarterback. And I just want to ask you, Greg, what you've seen on the film. Two games of Brock Purdy, he won't play. Two games of Mac Jones. What have you seen from Mac that the Niners can maybe lean on tomorrow night?
Yeah, and I think in some ways he's similar. I mean, you know, obviously when they beat, I guess it was New Orleans, which has proven not to be a very good team up to this point, still an NFL team, though, and you got to beat who's on your schedule. You know, I thought he made some good throws in that game. We talked about the Jennings touchdown that I guess was the sort of sealed the victory, which was a really good play by Mac Jones in terms of reading the defense as a change from one look to another look. But Mac Jones in some ways is very similar stylistically to Brock Purdy. You know, they're going to need to be able to run, and if they can't, it just becomes harder. It's just, you know, I'll give you an example. I think everybody would say correctly that Josh Allen is one of the two or three best quarterbacks in football.
Yep.
Do you know that the Bills lead the NFL in rushing attempts and in rushing yards? Okay. Now, but people would obviously say, oh man, Josh Allen. I've had this conversation with people who still think that, oh, if Josh Allen isn't Superman, they can't win. Well, meanwhile, they run the ball more and better than any team in the league. And last year, they had a run-pass ratio where they had more runs than passes. So, you know, it's just the reality of the NFL that the way teams are playing defense, too, is it's harder to create explosive plays in the pass game. We did a study for the Matchup Show where over the last 2-3 years, which maybe is a trend, 2-3 years one could say is a trend, there's been fewer and fewer 20-plus yard completions each and every year going back 2-3 years. The game is, you know, I don't want to say it's changing. Obviously, all offensive coaches want big plays and explosive plays, but the run game seems to be becoming increasingly more important in the way the game is being played because of the way defenses are structured. And you've got to be able to run the football to some degree.
Greg, I'm glad that you're talking defense. I'd like to ask you about the 49er defense, because to my untrained eye, the biggest issue that scared me last week was the inability for the 49ers to generate any sort of a pass rush. No sacks, no QB hits, and this is obviously coinciding with Nick Bosa going out. So how would you describe the difference in the way that pass rush looked without him there?
Well, the bottom line is they were unable to generate any consistent pressure on Lawrence, which is a shame because Lawrence really struggles when there are people around him. Because Lawrence is, you know, he's one of those mid-range quarterbacks who needs everything to work right. You get people around him, he struggles a lot. But, you know, they decided really not to rush the quarterback in terms of pressure. Like in the first half, Lawrence had 20 dropbacks. The 49ers only rushed 5 on 2 of those 20 dropbacks. So they decided to sort of stay with, you know, what Robert Saleh's approach is. I know that's been a bone of contention through the last couple of years with another coordinator who didn't want to rush the quarterback and didn't want to blitz. But that's the way they chose to play, and they weren't able to generate any pressure whatsoever. Now, I've been told over the years by coaches, people a lot smarter than I am, that if you can't get there with 4, you got to add a 5th guy, because at some point you got to impact the quarterback. If you can't impact the quarterback, you could be great on the back end. And obviously they were missing Green last week, so they played Luter. You know, if you can't impact the quarterback in any way, most quarterbacks in this league will probably find a way to complete passes.
He completed passes, but for only 174 yards.
I know.
And, you know, honestly, the defense really only gave up 19 points. It was a special teams gaffe that cost him. So will the bend but don't break approach work against Matthew Stafford tomorrow night, or do they have to try something else, in your opinion?
Well, you got to get people around Matthew Stafford. You know Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford may be the most respected quarterback in the league, believe it or not, by coaches, which is not the same as saying he's the best. You can get into that conversation. I don't get into best, you know, second best. I don't do that. But he is a big-time NFL quarterback, maybe on his way to the Hall of Fame. And when he has time to throw the football, he is phenomenal. And number one, he's an aggressive thrower, so he's going to make throws. Now, every once in a while, he'll throw a pick because, hey, he's an aggressive thrower. But he can make throws, and he makes big-time throws. So you better find a way to get people around him and make him feel like he has to speed up a little bit. Hey, sure, sacks are great, and you'd love to get them. But you're trying to impact the quarterback. You're trying to make him play faster mentally because then in a sense, you want him to play faster mentally and physically, you know, because Stafford's seen everything, so you're not necessarily going to slow him down mentally, but you just want him to play faster physically. Right. And if you can't do that, it's going to be tough.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, is with us. Yeah, Greg, like, I mean, this is kind of the way I look at tomorrow's game. I know everyone will focus on a backup QB and a bunch of backup wide receivers.
Yeah.
But correct me if I'm wrong. Kind of what you were just talking about. Both sides of the ball, the trenches play really favors the Rams right now based on the way that both teams have been playing. Is that, would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I mean, this is a game where the O-line for the Niners really has to play well, because this group up front, as you guys know, they're in your division, so I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know, but just so fans understand, this group up front of Verson Young on the outside and Fisk and Turner inside, I mean, they are as good as there is in the league as a four-man D-line pass rush group. And they've played very well this year, and they do a lot of different things. Chris Shula has done a lot of things on third down and pure pass situations, the way he moves people around. I mean, last week he had an inside stunt where Verse was a stand-up player, and you might have seen the play where he just ran through the center. I mean, he is as strong as there is. I mean, he can do that to tackles. Now, he may not do it to Trent Williams, who's, you know, obviously a first ballot Hall of Famer, but the point is those guys are physical, they're fast, they're aggressive, they're a very high percentage stunting team, and that becomes mental for the offensive line as much as it is physical. But they stunt maybe as much as any team in the league, and they're very multiple with their stunt concept. Just so people know what that means, is that means that there is a guy who penetrates, and then there's someone who goes and loops around him. So they do that with multiple guys and in different situations, and it's very, very hard to defend.
And I'm thinking about last week against Jacksonville, where Kyle Shanahan dialed up a couple of pressure beaters, the shovel pass for the touchdown, the screen to Tonjes. When you look at those plays, are they the types of things that will apply against an aggressive defense like the Rams?
I mean, I think that those kinds of things, you know, I mean, ultimately, the bottom line is this. I think the key in a game like this, to me, is what you do in normal down and distance situations. What I'm going to say is not profound here, because every coach thinks like this, but this is a team you really need to stay, particularly where the Niners are right now in this given season, at this moment, they really need to stay at a third and long. So to me, first down, second down are really important downs. If you can't stay somewhat ahead of the sticks, it's going to be hard to play against this defense. Now, the one thing I would say normally, but it may not be the case because of who the Niners are going to line up at receiver, is their corners are beatable players. But you know, we'll see, you know, with who they're going to put out there. Because what do you have? Kendrick Bourne. I assume they'll play Valdes-Scantling.
DeMarcus Robinson.
DeMarcus Robinson. You know, he's a guy, wherever he goes, DeMarcus Robinson seems to do well.
Yep.
But you know, now is, let me ask you a question. Is Jacob Cowing available, or is he still injured?
Not available yet. Yeah, he's not even on the injury report because I think he's still on IR, to be honest with you. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, again, I think most teams would look at the Rams defense and say the corners are beatable, exploitable players because it's Forbes, it's Williams, and it's Durant on the outside. I love their safeties. I mean, Kitchens and Curl. Curl's a really good player. Quentin Lake is one of the most overlooked, really good football players in this league for what he is asked to do in the context of that defense. And their dime player, Jalen McCullough, is a really good player too.
Greg, I'm certainly not saying the Niners can replicate it, but what did the Eagles do in the second half of their game against the Rams, against that defense that was working so well?
They threw the ball outside the numbers to A.J. Brown, who was one-on-one with the corners. That's how they predominantly move the ball in the pass game. Because in that game, and by the way, it's the only half this year where the Eagles' pass game has looked any good, but in the second half of that game, Hurts was 17 for 24 for 209 yards. And a lot of those, in third down critical situations, he just went outside the numbers to A.J. Brown, who can beat any corner. So that's why I'm saying that they're beatable on the perimeter. The question is, you know, the Niners don't necessarily play that way, though. That's not sort of, I'm not saying they would never play that way because you never know what a coach is going to do, particularly when he's lacking his normal players. But, you know, normally they're not a team that works outside the numbers. They, you know, their pass game tends to work more inside between the numbers. Those are tougher throws. And, you know, that's why, you know, Purdy is, you know, when he's on and the offense is humming, those are hard throws and he makes them. But, you know, again, you make those throws normally when you're ahead of the sticks and you can dictate how you get to those routes.
And in the game against Jacksonville, too often, you're right, they were behind the sticks getting 1 or 2 yards on first down. And you've mentioned, Greg, before that they run a lot of tight to the line formations, and against a Ram defense that will stunt a lot, is that, looking at the film, something that could be problematic for the 49ers against a very athletic defense up front?
You know, this is something that I always think about with coaches when I watch tape. You know, all coaches have tendencies and staples. I mean, that's just because what I hear a lot from coaches is coaches coach against coaches. You know, unless there's just a dynamic, unbelievable, transcendent player, and there's very few of those guys in the league, coaches coach against coaches. They know what the coaches are going to do in given situations. So, you know, so the balance for a coach is, how much can I tweak realistically during a season versus how much do we try to get better at what we do well? And in a short week, it's not likely that you're going to see dramatic changes. I mean, teams don't even usually practice in a short week because players are, you know, are hurting from the game on Sunday. So it's more classroom work. It's more meetings. It's not really practice. So I don't know how much their offense can look different against this defense, given that it's a short week and they're going to be playing with backup wide receivers.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films. Greg, I think you sort of already answered this with the way you talked about the Niner run game earlier in this conversation, but can we focus just on Christian McCaffrey for a second? There are a lot of people here wondering, does he look, you know, kind of fully like himself? I know it's been a tough run as far as the hand he's been dealt with what's going on in front of him, but how does he look to you on tape?
Well, I mean, I guess when he made Kaiser on the 8-yard touchdown reception grab at air, I guess he probably looked okay. So, I mean, exactly. Are we going to, you know, again, this is one of those conversations, guys. Are we going to, like, start evaluating every single run? And not you guys. I'm just talking, you know, I hope you understand that. Sure. You know, are we going to sit here and say, oh, gee, on that run, he didn't look great. Oh, well, no, that run, he looked pretty good. I mean, you know, I can't get caught up in that. I mean, to me, he looks fine. I don't watch him and go, oh, my God, this guy looks really slow, or he just doesn't look to. I mean, you know, when he made Kaiser grab at air and then scored a touchdown, I kind of felt like that kind of looked like Christian McCaffrey to me. Didn't he look like Christian McCaffrey to you on that?
Yeah, he did. The other one, too, is on the hook and lateral where Ricky gets it and flips it to Christian, and he was able to get to the edge, get to the corner.
And he showed burst on that.
Yeah.
He showed total burst. You know, it's funny. Sometimes backs, And I haven't necessarily noticed this with McCaffrey because I don't think he thinks like this. But every once in a while, backs, I've noticed this with Saquon Barkley this year, for instance. Sometimes when backs can't find space in the normal path, you know, the way the run is designed, sometimes they start looking and groping and searching. Okay. And Barkley has a tendency to do that. I don't think McCaffrey does, because if you notice, he does get hard yards. It might be 2 yards, but he gets hard yards. You know, he doesn't necessarily look to bounce or to run away from people. He kind of hits it up in there and gets whatever he can. And like I said, it may only be 2 yards or 3 yards, because I think he's only averaging what, like 3.1 or 3.3, you know. But, you know, he doesn't look to do other things. It's just not clean, and there's no space. But I don't think he looks any different than I would expect him to look. I think he looks fine.
Greg, I want to go back to your previous comment about how coaches coach against coaches. And these two, they know each other so well. They came up together, and obviously now coach against each other at least twice a year. So in the past, when this matchup happens, what do you normally see them do? Do they kind of go bread and butter, or do you often see them trying to, I don't know, show some new colors because they know that the other coach knows them so well?
I mean, I can't think about every play, but sure, I think these coaches are pretty much do what they do. I mean, again, I don't want to sit here and say that they never do anything different. I, you know, again, you'd have to evaluate every single play and break down and go back years, you know. But, you know, well, I'll give you an example, for instance. Here's, you know, Puka Nacua. I think most people would probably say he's a really good receiver.
Yep.
Do you know that Puka Nacua has 50 targets this year, and only one time was he the single receiver to whatever side of the field he is on? He is never the single receiver, meaning he's never the boundary X, the single receiver to the short side of the field, which is normally the receiver everybody thinks is the top receiver on a team. The guy that is the single receiver to the short side of the field. He's always on a multiple receiver side. He's the motion guy. He's a great player, but he's very scheme-based in the Sean McVay offense, and McVay knows exactly how to use him. Look, it's like Juwan Jennings when he's healthy, okay? Juwan Jennings came out of Tennessee. He ran like a 4.74. Pretty much everybody thought there's no way this guy could play in the NFL. But when he's healthy, he fits this offense and exceptionally well for how he's deployed. You know, if you asked him to be a boundary X and have to win one-on-one against big-time corners every single week, he's probably not that guy. You know, and this is where coaching comes in, understanding how to deploy your players to maximize their traits and minimize their limitations. So again, I can't sit here and say, gee, McVay's has done this and it's different, or Kyle's done this and it's different. I truly can't answer that, guys. But teams, these coaches know how to deploy their players.
Greg, great stuff as
awesome,
always.
Yep.
Yeah, we're looking forward to tomorrow night and then breaking it down with you next Wednesday.
Yeah, you know, it should be a fun one to watch. I mean, you know,
wow.
Hey,
yeah.
Maybe I'm a little different than you guys. I'm just hoping for a good competitive game that I can enjoy watching.
I think Niner fans agree with you this time. Like, if you could have a close game in the fourth quarter, we'd be thrilled.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I obviously talking to you guys, it's always more fun when they win, or maybe who knows, you know, but we'll see what happens. Look, they're 3-1. I mean, it's not like they're a bad football team.
Yeah, not the end of the world. So what I hear you say is take the Niners and the points. Thank you, Greg.
Hey, I've never bet on a sporting event in my life. I don't even follow that stuff. I don't even know what that means.
Is that true? You've never done it once? Like, not even with
never
a friend?
Never once. And I don't play fantasy football. None of that stuff interests me.
All right, we just had Al Michaels on, who has never eaten a vegetable. So a couple of nevers back-to-back.
Never eaten a vegetable in
his
life?
And he says Puka Nacua hasn't either.
Wow.
How about that, Greg?
You get see that on film.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, well, I can't say that I've never eaten a vegetable or a cheesesteak, you know, or anything like that. But, you know, hey, that's the way it goes.
Next time you see Puka Nacua go over the middle, I want you to think about that for a minute. No carrots, Greg.
So what does he eat?
I don't know, other stuff. Steak?
He eats DBs for lunch is what he eats.
Perfect. All right, Greg.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks as always.
Thank you. Greg Cosell, NFL Films. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. We'll continue to react to all that, but also next, Giants general manager Zach Manassian will join us right here on Willard and Dibs.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
You tell me, is he, are we good? You tell me, Lucas, you want to give it a shot? I mean, roll the dice, right?
That's what we've been doing. That's kind of the theme.
Fight through it.
Well, you replace a manager who is accomplished because you want to roll the dice, and you play a quarterback with a bum toe because you want to roll the dice, and you bring back a forward who may not be super happy because you're going to roll the dice.
Well, then let's do it.
Let's roll the dice.
River Island's guest line, general manager of the Giants, Zach Manassian, and I'll we'll just let the audience in. We're kind of going back and forth on whether or not to do the video or just the phone, because I guess the connection was giving us a problem for a second, but apparently now it's better, so let's roll the dice. Let's fire away and welcome in River Island's guest line, Zach Manassian, general manager of the Giants. You hear us okay, Zach? You doing good?
All good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, yeah. You look great. You sound great. Let's do this. You're handsome man.
Get over to
YouTube and check out Zach Manassian. Zach, thanks for coming on. So, yeah, you had the press conference earlier today along with Buster, kind of the exit interview situation. People want to know about the manager. Let's start right with that. I know you guys want to keep close to the vest what you're looking for, but let our listeners know, why not Bruce Bochy? Why does that not fit for you guys right now?
Yeah, I think Buster having the conversation with Boch, it's probably a better question for Buster. But I will say, I think Buster just felt with where we're at this time, just going in a little bit of a different direction. I think, you know, I was fortunate to be here with Boch for a year in 2019, obviously Buster for his almost the entirety of his career, and just absolutely think the world of him. And as Buster said, there's always going to be room for him with the Giants organization. And just at this time, just felt like, you know, the managerial search would take us a different direction.
And without getting into names, because I know you guys are keeping it close to the vest, but what type of attributes are you looking for the next manager to help get this team from 81-81 to being deeper in the mix?
Yeah, but Buster's talked about it a little bit. It's something I'm big on, just someone who's going to obsess over the details, obsess over baseball, obsess over being a Giant. I think that's what our fan base deserves. No little thing is too small for us to do extremely well. And someone energetic to come to the ballpark and challenge our players on a daily basis. So hopefully we can find that. I think we will.
We're talking with Zach Manassian, the general manager of the San Francisco Giants. And obviously Bob Melvin dismissed earlier this week. And then both Zach and Buster had their kind of exit interview, season closing press conference earlier today. Zach, here's one thing that I kind of wanted to dig into, which is that earlier in the year, when the team kind of went through their pre-trade deadline dive, there were all these questions around the clubhouse and with you guys of like, What is it? Can you put your finger on what's wrong? And a lot of guys gave a shoulder shrug of like, man, we can't figure it out. If we knew, we would tell you. Now that there's been another handful of months, I'd sort of ask you the same question. Like, what was it, do you think, that ailed the team this year when things weren't going well?
Yeah, well, I think probably the complicated answer is that it's never one thing. And when you end a season 81-81 with what our expectations are and where we want to go, it's easy for me to say that we need to get better in basically every facet of the game. It doesn't mean that we don't have answers here. I think we absolutely do. But I think there is the ability to get better from within, not even talking about players to potentially add, but to stress getting better at how we play defensively, how we run the bases, scoring more runs, preventing runs with our pitching staff. So there's a lot of things that I think we can get better at. And if we can get a little bit better in each space, I think it's going to lead to a lot more wins in the future.
You guys got to the deadline and it felt like it was more of a sell than it was a buy. And it turns out you wound up just three games short of where the wild card landed at 84 wins. Regret's probably too strong, but do you look back at that and think about the decision in a different way than you did in the moment?
No, I think I feel really comfortable that we made the best decision with the information we had at the time. I mean, look, I was really disappointed with how we played for really probably months on leading up to the trade deadline. Felt like it was the best thing to do for the future. We were fortunate to get a couple of players that actually impacted the team in the present and feel really good about, you know, the players that we got back being a big part of the organization going forward. So trade deadlines, they're never easy. I think every year it's a responsibility of the front office to look back and try and do a postmortem on that specific time. And we'll have time to do that now. I wish we were playing and we didn't have time to do that right now, but we will. And you try and learn from it and grow from it. But I am pretty excited about the players that we were able to bring back and trade.
Zach, can you let listeners know about the surgery on the left wrist that Bryce Eldridge is going to have? Like, what's the nature of the injury and sort of like what's the concern level or recovery time going forward?
Yeah, no, I think the recovery time is 6 to 8 weeks. Not a huge concern on our end. I mean, he should have really what we consider a very normal off season. So it's something that had bothered him. If you guys remember, he had missed a couple of days actually in spring training and kind of played through this wrist irritation throughout the year. So just felt like something we would get taken care of earlier in the off season so he can have as normal off season as possible, come to spring training ready to go.
And I fully get that you're not going to promise anything to anyone here sitting in the month of October, but is it fair to say that the plan is to have Bryce Eldridge on the major league team to start next year?
Yeah, I don't know if I would go as strong to say it was the plan or it is the plan. I would say I thought Bryce handled himself really well. You know, I know it probably doesn't show great in the slash line for the year, but I thought he controlled the strike zone pretty well. He handled himself well defensively, all things that bode really well for his future and for 26. So there's always the possibility he opens with the team. You know, it's still somebody with not a great deal of minor league plate appearances and still a lot of room to grow. I'm sure there will be a time where a lot of that growth happens at the major league level. Whether that's opening day or not, it's just far away for us to say that. But we're excited that he's here, excited that he was able to get his feet wet, and looking forward to seeing him in Scottsdale.
One of the struggles and a frustrating point for a lot of fans was the defense this year. You were in the near bottom in a lot of the metrics. Kind of a silly question, but how do you get better on defense in the offseason at the major league level?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's things, and look, I've talked to both players about this. There's things I think with our outfield defense, Jung Hoo and Ramos in particular, where there are some things that I think they can focus on to improve out there. Jung Hoo himself talked to me about getting a little tentative at times, and he wants to be more aggressive. So, you know, I do think there are things that those two in particular can do that will really help our outfield defense. I think as an infield group, you know, Patty Bailey, everyone knows, is one of the best, if not the best defender in baseball. I thought Rafi Devers played great over there the more and more he played. You got me, guys?
Now we got you. Yeah. We were hoping it would just come back, and it did. Look at that.
Yeah. I do think there's a lot of positives there, but, you know, and obviously adding Drew Gilbert, I think his strong suit, he's a really good defender, right field, center field. So there's some things that I think internally we can look for improvement, and obviously it's something we can focus on as we talk about player acquisitions in the offseason.
General Manager of the Giants, Zach Manassian, is joining us here on Willard and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Zach, I'm glad you brought up Patrick Bailey, and I know a lot of fans are wondering about this. With the addition next year of basically the review system of balls and strikes, Patrick's framing ability becomes less of a factor, I would think. So how does that rule change affect the way you view Patrick as your catcher?
Yeah. No, it's a great question. It's something we've looked at more out of curiosity for the industry. It's still going to be relative, right? Catcher's framing, I think it's still relative, and with Patty being so good at it, my hope is we're putting more pressure on the other team to challenge calls than any other team in baseball. So I still think it is a strength of his that is going to show relative to what other teams get out of their catchers. You know, does he save as many runs as he would otherwise without ABS? Probably not. But relative to other catchers, I still think it's going to show as a huge advantage.
Is there a chance if Jesus Rodriguez comes up and is able to catch and is a good right-handed bat, is it possible that Patrick Bailey would abandon being a switch hitter and just focus on being a left-hand hitter?
Man, yeah, it's a good question. I haven't really thought about that. I think excited about Pat's September and what he did, but that we haven't talked to Pat about ever taken away swinging the bat right-handed, at least not that I can remember, but obviously excited about Jesus and what he brings to the table. And I almost look at catching as it's almost becoming the NFL's version of the two running back system, where it's just so demanding, and you need to have two pretty good guys back there, and certainly excited that we were able to acquire Jesus.
Yeah, that's an interesting answer. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station in the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app. Coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.